Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio here in the brand spanking new studio at WHPC.
It's happening.
Woo! 90.3 FM, Garden City. Every day I come in, it's a little bit nicer. I mean, it's got some work to do, but I mean, it's really getting to be world class in here.
Apparently, someone had a time deciding which shade of gray to go with.
Yeah, but I like it.
There's a little patchwork.
Like a little bit more work in it, but I mean, the soundproofing is really nice. Definitely a huge improvement of what we've had in here.
This is high caliber.
I wonder if you can hear the difference on the radio. Probably not in the quality of our broadcast so much, but in the technical quality of our broadcast, perhaps.
Well, it sounds different in the headphones, anyway.
Well, Dave's got some. What do you know?
Well, actually, we had some improvements to our transmitter as well yesterday, I believe.
I had heard of it. You know something? I was told that the transmitters were better on Wednesday, and I talked about it the whole show. Like we went from 15% to 100%. I said, I can't wait to get out there and see how far our signal goes. I didn't see any difference in its distance.
Well,
we
didn't tune in until way far out.
Oh, it was around Huntington, maybe, and it was difficult to hear there. Is the range supposedly improved?
Well, I know one of the tubes was broken, so that's probably a big issue, right? So we replaced it, and I don't know, call us. If you can hear us really far away, give us a call.
Right, exactly. if you're suddenly hearing something that you're not used to hearing here, let us know. That'd be really cool. I'll give out the number. I rarely do that on Fridays. But it would be nice to hear just behind the scenes what's going on, what you think. 516-572-7440 is the number here at the station as the first call comes in. Wow. Well, of course, it's Friday, and we're doing our Motown show, our 58th Motown show. We're getting near the end of what we're going to be doing because I said we'd cover it until the label left Detroit for L.A., and this is our first show covering 1971, so we are getting near the end. This is pretty much when the youth appeal of the label is really fading.
It's waning.
It is. I mean, and that's from both perspectives. See, from the audience's perspective of no longer, you know, kids aren't really being attracted to Motown so much anymore. And from the artist's perspective as well, because the artists aren't really making music that appeal to kids any longer. I mean, you have two artists who have got, you know, who are huge at the label, who now are like pretty much bringing on a mature appeal. People like Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder, who had a huge appeal with kids, are now definitely
their
shooting.
Their audience has grown up, and they've grown up with them.
Exactly, and their music is maturing as well. So it just wasn't really so much about the kids anymore. Although Berry Gordy didn't really see that change coming, and he was kind of trying to fight it. But here was the other problem. He was sort of like mentally and even often physically absent, because he was focusing at this point mostly on the move to California, which was a given at this point. And he knew also that he wanted to establish a movie career for Diana Ross. So he was concentrating on the movies as much as music. So,
wow, it's just like Elvis's career.
Yeah, right. I mean, so the distraction ended up hurting the music in that regard as well. There's also, I mean, even in the songs and like the attitudes of the songs and the songwriters changed. I mean, you're thinking of how like songs like My Guy or My Girl wouldn't even have a chance of existing in 1971. Now it's things like Smiling Faces Sometimes, you know, or What's Going On, all these, you know, things. That's pretty much what today's show is going to be about, as you'll see. Our first song, though, is by the one band at the label that did manage to have a huge amount of youth appeal, the Jackson 5. This track is actually their fifth single, but it's also their first to not reach number one. So it's kind of interesting and as well, because here's the one band that was doing incredibly well, four number one singles in a row, and this slips. It stops at number two. What's causing that? Well, there was a Utah-based family band of like barbershop-style vocal.
Are you talking about
singers.
The Osmonds?
Yeah. They had stolen a lot of thunder from the Jackson 5. I mean, it's kind of incredible, but what had happened was the Osmond brothers had got a taste of fame by appearing on the Andy Williams Show.
I loved Andy Williams, I have to say, I loved the Osmonds.
They were, well, that's how you first heard of the Osmonds, because that's where they were, on the Andy Williams Show.
It was my boyfriend's show.
You see that? Right, because you were a big Andy Williams fan as a little girl.
As a little girl, couldn't get enough of them.
He helped to get them, you know, famous to some degree on his show, and then they got this stylistic overhaul. In the wake of Jackson 5, Mania, Rick Hall down in Muscle Shoals figured he could remake the band entirely. So they go down to Muscle Shoals.
Is that where they got their little fringe leather vests from?
Well, it's where they got their sound. I don't know if they put their vests down there. But the track One Bad Apple was a production, was a Muscle Shoals production.
Oh.
That's kind of why it was kind of cool. And it ended up going to number one, and it sat at number one for 5 weeks. And while it sat at number one, how ironic is it that that is the song that kept this song at number two? Isn't that weird?
Well, I don't know what this song is yet.
Okay, the song by the Jackson 5 is called Mama's Pearl. Well, there you had that song was one serious wake up call from Motown, for to be sure. They had no idea what they had been doing wrong. So how could this possibly happen? Well, you know what? I mean, there's a lot of excuses that you could make up about it. You could, you know, say we didn't promote it enough. How come we didn't? You know, how did we ever let this happen with the Osmond Brothers? You know, copying our style. But you know, if you got to compare the two songs side by side, who had the better record?
Is that a trick question?
Well, it sounds it, but you know, I mean, I honestly think that if I had heard One Bad Apple, if I was a kid and I heard One Bad Apple and I heard Mama's Pearl, I'd probably have picked One Bad Apple as the better song.
Right.
It probably was a better record. I mean, Mama's Pearl, it's not that it's bad, but it's just nowhere near as good as the four singles that preceded it.
Right.
Think about, you know, think about The Love You Save and,
right.
And I Want You Back.
It wasn't as
ABC.
Catchy. And you're talking about kids and they like catchy.
Yep, I agree. So, you know, Motown had to basically be, you know, that, do some seriously
specifically,
thinking.
I'm talking about I was in elementary school when this stuff came out, and I can tell you that the Osmonds were doing it for me. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I liked the Jacksons, the songs that were like the big hits for them. But
yeah, but if you were going to be, if I bet you remember One Bad Apple better than Mama's Pearl.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that was a number one song and a number two song back to back. So
plus, I had a crush on Donnie.
I can't say the same. I was
well.
I definitely related to Michael, and I was kind of like thought that the Osmonds were a bit, you know, like super clean. I wasn't really getting it.
Yeah, but growing up in the South, that's what all parents wanted their kids to aspire to be, was super clean. So, you know, parents were pushing the Osmonds.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt they had the image. Well, as we move through our show, the next artist up is a guy by the name of Joe Hinton. Now, Hinton was a songwriter and a producer who had some modest successes at the label. He wrote a few songs that did reasonably well for various artists, worked with Gladys Knight and the Pips as well. Well, here he takes his first turn on the other side of the microphone. It's also his last, his only single from Motown. Oddly, he didn't write this song. It was written by somebody named Ronald Miller. But here is Joe Hinton singing, "Let's Save All the Children."
It's mighty hard when you're 2 years old in a world that's torn apart, and the myth of human kindness leaves a hunger in your heart. You're reaching out for something, but there's nothing you can do. What you need is someone reaching out for you. That's all. Say time is now. Let's all save the children, and the time is now. You won't get help from the men next door, 'cause the men next door don't care. His heavy heart remembers when he was lying there. We nursed him with our anger, and we raised him with our hate. When we gonna learn to love what we create?
No fade out, indeed. Joe Hinton.
I don't think that did a thing for saving any children.
No. I got this thing with songs with titles like that, "Let's Save All the Children."
Oh,
it's like,
God.
What are you going to do right about? Let's kill them all? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, of course. But all right. Whatever. Didn't really do that well on the charts anyway.
Something must have happened bad to the children that, you know, prompted this guy to write that song. That's
actually
all
the song
say.
Was used as a promo thing for a charity event that Motown was involved in. They did, but Berry Gordy had a sister that died young, and they had a charity that they had done for helping the youth of in Detroit going to college. And they used this song for one of the events, the ball that they had, which was meant as a fundraiser.
It was a gala.
So that's pretty much where that came from, or how it was used anyway.
Okay.
I had mentioned a while back that Rare Earth, the label Rare Earth, was obviously used to be like the rock part of Motown. They were trying to get involved in rock and roll, but there really weren't that many artists that were being signed to it that were local. So what they were doing was they were importing a lot of artists, you know, records anyway, or songs from European artists. A lot of them were tracks that we didn't play simply because they were just leased songs. So it really wasn't Motown tracks at all. In this instance, though, this is a Rare Earth release of a UK band that was licensed to Motown that actually did come out. So we're going to play this one since it was released, although it had very little chart impact. In fact, no chart position at all. The name of the group is Brass Monkey, and the name of the song is Sweetwater. Imagine that. It's a little bit of country rock from Motown coming out of Detroit.
That wasn't that bad, but
no, not at all.
Don't imagine it going anywhere.
It didn't. That's why you didn't hear of it before, because it really didn't go anywhere at all, at least not in this country. The group was called Brass Monkey, and the track was called Sweet Water. Looking at every Motown single in chronological order, this is show number 58 of us doing this. I've been doing this a long time. It's almost part of me now.
You're going to miss it when it's gone.
Yeah. Well, we're up to, this is the year 1971 that we are covering now. So we've covered about 12 years of this so far. And we're going to probably take this to the end of 71 before we condense things down really quickly and then wrap it up to move on to our next artist. But before we get near that, we've got the next song to cover.
Okay.
Chuck Jackson. We were talking about him for a while ago. Chuck had some success before he came to Motown. And then he came to Motown and nothing happened. This is his quote on the subject. It wasn't a bad move to leave Scepter. That was his old label.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bad move to go to Motown. Because the history now shows that Scepter was going under anyway. So I just didn't, you know, I just went to the wrong company. Motown was not a Chuck Jackson record company. They didn't know the New York sound. I'm not talking about the studios now. I'm talking about the singer. They didn't know how to cut me. They always cut their singers octaves higher than they actually sang. And when they tried to cut me out of my range, I started to really scream. It just didn't work. I can understand. And things were complicated further by the songs that he was given. This next track that we're going to play is actually a Smokey Robinson composition. But this is not, I would say, a song that would have qualified as one of Smokey's works of genius. Leave it at that.
Mm.
After this was released, Chuck Jackson left the label and went to ABC, where he actually did have some, at least a modicum of success over there. But check this out and tell me what you if this is the way Smokey Robinson was writing all the time, I don't think he would have had the reputation that he had. Here's Chuck Jackson singing Pet Names. Strange Smokey Robinson composition.
Doesn't sound like the usual fare for Smokey.
Not for Smokey.
No.
It's Chuck Jackson singing it. The name of the song is Pet Names. Got an interesting call from Keith in Hollis, Queens, though, called A, to tell us that the signal is stronger there, which is great news. Thank you very much, Keith. Good to know that. And also, he made some comparisons between Chuck's voice and Levi Stubbs, thinking that might have been a factor. And I think that he's right, because Chuck's got a great voice like Levi Stubbs, but it's hard to differentiate yourself when you're at a label. Well, you do sound like somebody else on the label. So
right.
He's got a good point. Now, I'm making it sound as though the whole year was a bummer for the label. And although there was a lot of things that were going on and you could just see that things were changing, there was some stuff that was happening, at least musically, that was absolutely great. And the next track we're going to play is actually one of my favorite songs that came out of Motown. It's by The Temptations. And it's a really odd song choice, I think, for the Temptations to be recording this at this time in their career, considering that at this point they had a very long, successful run of topical songs. Every time we're playing The Temptations, it's like Runaway Child or Psychedelic Shack, Cloud Nine, something which is pretty much, you know, Don't Let the Joneses Get You Down, some sort of a cutting edge, sort of like a commentary thing.
Right, was, social commentary.
Yeah. And it was all this Norman Whitfield and Barrett Strong. They were on a good groove with this, with The Temptations, and this is how they reinvigorated their career and helped to bring them out of the 60s and into the 70s with a whole new energy. And that's what went wrong for bands like The Four Tops, because when they lost Holland, Dozier Holland, there was nobody there to bring them into the 70s in the same way. So the temps are riding high. So it's weird that they would even release this song, because it's an incredible flashback, in my mind, to what they had been, or to the 60s sound. Nevertheless, I think it's maybe one of the best things they ever recorded. It's got a lead vocal by Eddie Kendricks, and it's actually the last time he's singing with the band. This is the very last record that Eddie Kendricks sang with The Temptations. He was off for a solo career. It also has a bridge sung by Paul Williams, if you listen to that, you know. And he quits the group soon after this track as well, on doctor's orders. He was failing health due to drink, drugs, and everything else. So with Paul Williams and Eddie Kendricks out of the band after this track, that leaves two of the original five Temptations. The only members left are Otis Williams and Melvin Franklin to hold down the band. But here, for the last time, we hear four of the five Temptations together singing this track, as I said, one of my favorites by the group, called Just My Imagination, Running Away With Me.
such a beautiful, languid song.
Oh,
it's hard
yes.
to come in and talk on top of it because it's such a great, great. I love that track so much. It just
it almost leaves you speechless.
It is. It's a timeless song. It's a shame. It's the last time. Eddie Kendricks was eventually replaced by Damon Harris and let's see who else. Richard Street is the guy who came in to replace Paul Williams. So it'll be a different Temptations from this point forward. Ardeen Taylor. Last time we played a track by him, I believe it was a hit. We played Indiana Wants Me.
That's right.
Here's his disappointing follow-up to that track. This one stalled at number 66, which was not what he was hoping for. It's a song called Ain't It a Sad Thing.
Big brown tin can lying in the black sand. Say where'd they all go? The tears of mine say I really don't know. Down by the river where the river don't flow, we can't go there no more. Down by the river where the river don't flow, the birds don't sing. It is a sad thing.
Listen to the wind blowing over the land. Listen to the reasons that you don't understand. Reach out and take my hand.
Ardeen Taylor hoping for a hit follow-up after Indiana Wants Me. Ended up missing with that one. As I said, stalling at number 66. The name of the track, Ain't It a Sad Thing.
Well, I'm surprised it made it to 66, quite frankly. But I mean,
well, I'm not surprised about what happened with this next track. As much as Just My Imagination is one of my favorite songs, well, this song not only might define this era for Motown, it might define the entire year, or maybe the entire era in music. That's how important this song is, I feel, to its time. I'll tell you right away. We're talking about Marvin Gaye, the song What's Going On.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it's a long story that I can tell you about this as best I can. I know that, well, the song was written originally with songwriter Al Cleveland sitting down at Obie Benson's house. Obie Benson's in the Four Tops. Uh-huh. And they were talking about social issues, and they had a guitar. And they're passing their ideas back and forth on the guitar. And they eventually hit on a melody that they liked. So they continued to write some ideas of some songs and some words that they thought were going to fit the idea of what they were talking about. And Cleveland worked on it for a while and then came up with the catchphrase to fit the melody, What's Going On? As a topical song, they didn't think it was going to work at Motown because they knew how Berry Gordy was pretty much allergic to topical material. So they actually considered sending the song to Joan Baez, thinking that maybe she'd sing it. Then they figured, okay, maybe Obie Benson, being a member of the Four Tops, maybe they would cut it. But what they really wanted to do was give it to Marvin Gaye. They just thought that he'd do the best job with it. But
right.
No, good luck. First of all, Gaye was still totally withdrawn, upset, about the whole situation about with Tammy Terrell passing away. He was developing his own bit of codependency on drugs. He was depressed. He wanted to stay out of the studio. He wasn't really interested in recording. He was annoyed at the label for a lot of different reasons, and he wasn't really voicing what it was that was bugging him. He actually was thinking about becoming a football player at this time.
Right, the Detroit Lions.
Right, training with the Detroit Lions. He just wanted to do something different because he just was annoyed and bothered by everything. He had one of the things that bugged him was he had a chance to produce finally. They let him produce the group The Originals. And he had two hits with them, if you recall. We played them both a couple of weeks ago, Baby I'm For Real and The Bells.
Mm-hmm.
So Marvin had some success as a producer. But the label, Berry Gordy, refused to let Marvin produce himself. So he was starting to just boil over. And what made things worse, he had a brother now at this point who was in Vietnam. And he's coming back and he's telling him all these horror stories about the war.
Right.
And, of course, on every day on TV, he's seeing the protests, seeing the arrests that were taking place in Washington, which is where Marvin came from. That's where he grew up and where his original singing career was, around Washington, D.C. And, of course, then the Pentagon Papers come out about all the secret missions, about what's happening, of course, in Vietnam. So he's basically, he hears about this song that Obie Benson and Al Cleveland writes, and he just says, you know what, he's going to jump on it. So he grabs the song, and he says he starts to produce it for himself anyway. He goes, this is a perfect vehicle for me. This expresses what I want to say. I don't care what Berry Gordy thinks. So he invites the musicians that he wants into the studio, creates a party atmosphere. He supplies drinks for the band. Brings down like a little bar. Lets everybody have drinks and hang out.
It does have that sort of
that
moving,
vibe to it.
Moving through a party sort of vibe to it. Like
definitely. It's... Absolutely. James Jamerson shows up. He's hungover. He actually recorded the song lying on the floor while they recorded this track. That's the way the story went. But the rest of the people just, you know, having a few drinks. Marvin at this point was really into getting high. So he even rolled a joint for himself during the session. And when he's doing his vocal track, if you listen really closely at the 3 minute and 12 second point of the song, you'll hear him take a drag. You'll just hear him take a toke on the track. You'll 3 minutes, 12 seconds in. It's kind of like when you find out, like, wow,
that's what was going on.
The way they recorded the song, first thing that happened is the background vocals went down first, even before he did this. It included help from two of his friends that he made when he was training with the Detroit Lions. Lem Barney and Mel Farr are on the track with drinks, hanging out, helping Marvin with some of the vocals. He then overdubbed his own voice a few different times, just trying to get the right lead vocal. When he's got done recording, say about three or four different takes, he couldn't decide which take he liked the best. So he yells to the engineer, he says, play back two of my vocals, put one on my left ear and one on my right ear. So he does, and he plays them both back. But the thing is, the playback came in mono. So what Marvin was hearing was two vocal parts on top of one another. So he's hearing himself kind of singing harmony with himself,
uh-huh,
and drifting in and out of various phrases because he would sing the song a little bit different each
different.
Time. Yeah. He wasn't trying to double his voice, which is a trick that the Beatles, a lot of bands would do. They'd sing the track once and then they'd try to sing the part again identically to give it some strength. Well, Marvin had no intention of doing that. He was just singing it, trying to find out which one would have the most emotion. And he went off in different directions. So when you layer them, you hear his voice coming in and coming out and you know, coming together and then drifting away. It was like this great happy accident, really. It was perfect. It was, you know, had this lazy feel. It was ethereal and removed from reality, which was perfect for him. So he submits the song for release to Berry Gordy. So let's put this out.
Let's see what happens.
Berry Gordy rejects it outright. Says, nope, not coming out. We're not going to ruin your career. You're not singing protest music. Absolutely no. Instead, he decides to release, Berry Gordy puts out a greatest hits album with a picture of Marvin Gaye, a cartoon Marvin Gaye on the cover, dressed as Superman flying across the sky.
Nice.
It was like, Marvin Gaye is so insulted by this, he can't believe it. You can still see that album cover if you look for it. It's called Super Hits. Marvin Gaye dressed as Superman. So now Marvin Gaye's angry.
Oh.
So he gives Berry Gordy an ultimatum. He goes, you know what? You're going to release my single or I will never record for you again. So now it's a problem. Now Gordy doesn't know what to do. So Gordy figures he'll fight back. Mix it again. Marvin Gaye mixed it 10 different times with it constantly getting rejected. Berry Gordy didn't concede until he learned that there were 100,000 pre-orders for the single.
Oh,
since word came out that it was going to be released. So that's when he backed off and finally decided to release it. As a screw you, we're always talking about how every Motown track phase. We even made a joke about it earlier. Marvin, just to like really stick it to Berry Gordy a little bit, adds a fake fade out at the end of the track, and then he fades it back in. It was definitely meant as a screw you, but it was taken off of the album, so here is the original single version with the fake fade out. And if you have a second hand on your stopwatch, check it out at 3:12 and see if you can hear Marvin smoking. Here's what's going on. You go, Marvin. That's great. That's that fake fade out that I was talking about. Did you hear it? Did you hear that little? At 3:12. Very interesting. Wow. Great track. What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. It ended up going to number two on the pop charts, only number two, number one on the R&B charts. But that song absolutely defines
classic
that era. The hangover that was left after the whole psychedelic era and how things had turned around. It was like finally people were beginning to be able to speak their minds in a very public way about how they felt. And that song really just obviously still speaks volumes.
Right.
Another interesting thing that was going on around this time, a new group at Motown actually had shown up. They were called the Undisputed Truth. Now, the group was actually the result of Norman Whitfield's insecurity. How a guy could be insecure who has had pretty much so many hits for so many different acts. He really is the one guy, the one producer who's pretty much guaranteeing hits for artists at this point, whether it's God Is Not in the Pips, of course, his work with the Temptations. He was pretty unstoppable. He was the number one producer at Motown at this point, without a doubt. And yet, he was really sensitive to some comments that he heard people sniping about him behind his back. People were saying, you know what? Norman's having all these hits with Gladys, and he's having all these hits with the Temptations, but they were already stars. They were stars before Norman got a hold of them. They're just still famous because
he's riding their coattails.
Yeah. And he's like, wait a minute, I could have had a hit with anybody. And it didn't have to be just because they were famous.
Now he's got something to prove.
Now I have to prove it. So I'm going to put a group together from scratch, and I'm going to prove that I can get a hit band out of them. So he grabs Joe Harris, a guy who was actually a child singer who stayed in the business through various permutations. And there were two background singers that came to the label, Brenda Joyce Evans and Billy Ray Calvin. And he put the three of them together, and he started to produce an album for them. And their first release was not a hit, but it was good practice. It ended up being number 43 on the R&B charts. Here's the Undisputed Truth singing Save My Love for a Rainy Day.
Like a bolt of lightning, love struck me down. You really upset my soul. I fell in love with you the first time I saw you. I've been trying to let you know, but I can see you're in love with somebody else. So take my love and put it on the shelf. And when you find
as a kid, I remember The Undisputed Truth because I remember buying their single. It was on the Gordy label, as I recall it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't this single. It was the single that came out after this one. And I liked it a lot. And this, I don't remember ever hearing this song before, but I definitely like this group.
Yeah, definitely. For a child star, you know, his voice matured well.
Definitely. He was in a group called, what did I say, Little Joe and the Moroccos or something like that.
That's
I think
a funny
it was.
Name.
Basically, it was a Frankie Lyman sort of a thing, apparently.
Well, he handled it better than Frankie Lyman, I guess.
Yeah, exactly, by surviving old enough to be in another group as right. you know, in his adult life.
Right.
But good group, The Undisputed Truth. As you can tell by that track, I would definitely give that song a decent rating, too, but it didn't do better on the pop charts. Well, we're playing every Motown A-side in chronological order, and I hope you're enjoying the show. If you're interested in hearing the show again, or if you want to, you know, catch it at your leisure, you can check us out on the internet. We post our shows on our website. They all go into our archive, and we eventually get them onto our main website. So our main website is definitely behind the times. The poster is very slow getting my shows up. But if you go to our archive site, Shut Up and Listen,
you can get every new show.
They're all there right away. I get them
right
there
away.
Right away. That's shaddupandlisten.com. If you go there, you're going to see this show should be there in about maybe an hour's time. And you can just pretty much check. You go onto the website. You're going to see the show sitting right there. Just click on play the show whenever you want to. It's play on demand. Makes it nice and simple.
And if you have an MP3 player or iPod, you can put it on your player and take it with you.
Definitely.
To go.
Exactly. And there's 300 some odd shows, so you could actually hear the entire series if you're interested, or actually go through the months and you might find another series that interests
you.
You
know, it'd be cool if you have a little iPod Nano, you could just dedicate it to putting our shows on it.
If anybody does that, call me and let me know. Aren't we self-important? But I do think it's been a real, you know, the real gas doing this Motown series. I'm loving it. And I'm almost kind of sad about coming to the end of it. But all good things come to an end, and it'll make room for our next artist. And I know, in fact, I'm already prepping it. Louis Armstrong is going to be the next artist we're going to be covering on How Music Changed. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll be doing a number of shows on Louis. The other site, if you want to go to our main website, that's just AmericanHitRadio.com or AmericanHitNetwork.com, where the shows do eventually get pasted. And you can... Posted. And you can check them all out there. Posted, pasted.
I don't know what's happening to them.
And by the way, also, since we're thinking that our broadcast range is a little bit is improving from where it has been, if you want to give us a call and tell us what you think, 516-572-7440.
Stronger, bigger, better.
That's our number, 516-572-7440. And like I said, you can check us out at Shut Up and Listen. That's SHADDUPANDLISTEN. All right, back to our show. Where were we? Motown, 1971, early part of the year, still winter. And this is the next track up. It's by a group called Ken Christie and the Sunday People. What's really weird about this is that the song is a reference to grass, a blatant reference to grass, and it gets past Motown's quality control department. Wow. I mean, Marvin Gaye's little drag there, you could see that getting passed. They're not going to hear that until they find out about it later. But a song that talks about it in the lyrics? That's surprising. Anyway, here's Ken Christie and the Sunday People with Don't Pay Me No Mind.
Take the good with the bad and I hold my head.
All right, Ken Christie and the Sunday People with Don't Pay Me No Mind. We've got time for one more, and it's going to be the poor, it's sad to say this, the poor hapless David Ruffin. Guy was such a huge star, obviously, when he was the lead singer for The Temptations, went on a solo career, had big high hopes for himself, burned a lot of bridges, though, a few too many. And not only that, he had a couple of his own issues with drugs and such, and this was causing him all sorts of trouble. So it was a hard time for David Ruffin by 1971. His solo career did not pan out the way that he had expected, and for its own reasons, Motown had decided to hold back promotion and even canceled their scheduled LP of his music. So it's a tough time for David. They did give him a single, though, and that's how we're going to end our show. David Ruffin singing Each Day is a Lifetime. Meanwhile, I want to thank everybody for listening. And I hope you can join us next week on Wednesday and Friday when we return with another edition of American Hit Radio at 5 p.m. here on WHPC 90.3 FM out of Garden City, New York. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
I remember holding you and feeling like a king. How I miss you, baby, when I think of all the little things I used to do with you. Now that I'm without you, I'm so blue. It seems that I just kissed your lips a little while ago. Everything around me makes me stop a while and think of all the things we used to do. How the time goes so slow without you. Before my eyes, and I can almost taste the tears that drip right down upon my lips the moment that I knew, baby, that never again would I be seeing you. No, listen, there's no one that can take the place you hold in my heart. The thought that seems to cause for mine is knowing by now you're in the arms of someone new, and here I stand. Nothing to do.